Tupou driving hard at the line. Tupou, has he done it? No, it's play on. They go wide. They go wide. They get the try. It's O'Connor for Queensland.
Welcome to Rugby Fixation. We're tuning in pretty shortly after a Wallabies win. A nice way to start off the 2021 season. The Wallabies got over the French rugby side 23-21 in what was a game that we didn't lead until the very last second. So plenty of tension. And to join me chatting with someone in the stands with me watching it, Alex North, regular host. Mate, what did you think of the game?
Yeah, it was an interesting one for a few reasons. Firstly, Wednesday night test match is always a bit different, but I think Brisbane really turned up and did pretty well to get the numbers they did. The stands were pretty full and it looked good out there. The game itself was left a little bit on the table, I think, for both teams. I think, you know, the Wallabies can have improvement and I think the French looked dangerous. So it'd be interesting to see how things go the next game.
Yeah, especially because we're still trying to work out what the best side for both teams is. And obviously, we don't have the full list of the French players available. But aside from a few injuries, the Wallabies do have a pretty solid-looking squad. And I still think there's a few key areas they're just trying to nail on. So it'll be interesting to see what Tuesday and Saturday looks like. Just as you touched on with the crowd was pretty big there. And everyone did seem to be getting into it, especially at the end with that win. Obviously, that's going to get people going. The crowd figures ended up at 17,821, which, you know, is a pretty good turnout, especially when you consider, you know, the game only just got moved to Brisbane 10 days ago. Tickets didn't go on sale till quite recently because of the snap lockdown in Queensland. And even then, there was mandatory mask wearing as well. So there wasn't a whole lot of incentive to go out, I don't think. So it's good to see that many people turn up. And as people have already pointed out, Suncorp seems to be a bit of a fortress for that. Three games already, we've seen the Wallabies or the Reds, which is our team, not winning for the majority of the match, but then sneaking it right at the end with either a penalty or late try. So the Reds did it to the Brumbies twice, and the Wallabies now doing it to the France. North, is it a good sign that this team can win ugly, even if they, you know, haven't been in the lead the whole match?
Yeah, I think that's always a good sign when you can, you know, come from behind and sort of sneak a win that, you know, maybe isn't going your way. I think it's a sign of a team that's got determination. And I think with the subs, once they've come on, they really turned the game a little bit. I think the last 20, the attack looked much more structured and more dangerous from, yeah, those subs that came on.
And look, we might break down the game sort of, I guess, score by score first, and then we'll have a look at the players and just see how they went, because we do have a test match in 5 days now. I'll be keen to see what changes they make to it, because we heard from Checker over the last few days just saying if he's a coach and there's a turnaround this quickly, he wants to have his best team out there as much as possible. So he's not making wholesale changes. It'd be interesting to see if Rennie's on that same wavelength. But just as we go through the scores, in the 6th minute, the French got over. They just had a really easy turnover from one of the scrums where it was our feed and we just didn't really protect the ball at the back. French pounced on it. They're young and quick, so they jumped on that. And after a few phases, just the offloading game that we sort of spoke about in the pick and drive episode at the start of the week with Benny Alexander, it was the back rowers. I know Geelong and McAloo getting involved in offloading it out. I think Jonathan Dante, who was huge in person, did a nice cutout to Gavin Villiers. Just touching on that, Northie, we saw him in person. What were his hammies doing?
They were hanging. He was all hammies. He was a giant.
I've never been more impressed by a specimen at a rugby match. I don't think he was jacked. So to see him not just being a destructive wrecking ball, but also able to fling a nice, pass for a try assist, I thought was quite impressive. So Gavin Villiers, the winger who ended up scoring both their tries, got his first one. Then there wasn't a score for a bit in the 18th minute. It seemed to be a bit of a trend for the night where we'd try and do this unders line after already going out wide. And I think it was Tom Wright cut back inside to Hunter Paisami. And it was just too much speed, bounced off the chest and didn't really look like a very clean play. It looked like something that was pretty organized, not sort of reading the game. And that sort of eventuated in a French penalty because Harry Wilson had to pick up the scraps and then he got isolated. So they, caught him there with the ball. So Louis Carbonell kicked that over. And then pretty soon after, probably the best try of the match was a really nice set piece try. So the French had a scrum. They shot it out to the 10, who again passed it out to Danty with a really quick inside ball to Gavin Villiers again. And he sort of ran untouched for 40 meters for a try. Just watching that try back in person, it was a bit hard to see how and why it happened. But I'll give you a guess, Northy. Who do you think was covering around that might have missed that tackle?
Oh, look, at a guess, could it have been Noah?
Noah would have been a good guess. And he was sort of in the vicinity, but it was Gordon.
Okay. Gordon,
yeah, it just came off the back of the scrum and just... It seemed like he had a real target for the other nine. And maybe that was part of the French decoy, where he was sort of running right past him and into that gap where Villiers ran. Gordon ran right past that. Like, he could have sort of stopped and stood the ground, but clearly thought something else was going on. So not a great read, but it was also a really well-worked try by the French. So I don't want to take that away from them. I think that probably... We could debate that later on, but that could be the try of the night. Brandon Pangramosa barged over in the 35th minute. It was pretty well deserved because we had a few rolling balls. But, I mean, we were there. We saw it all sort of unfold. That was a long phase by the time they got down to the 22 before they actually scored, wasn't it? Like, was that time wasted? Should they have gone for the sticks or should they have tried something different, North?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I think, you know, in test match rugby, there's always a feeling to take points when they're on offer. Mm. In saying that, you know, it does get to a point when you spend that much time down their end that, you know, you want to come away with, you know, at least 5, hopefully 7 points, because I guess 3 can seem like a cop-out when you've been parked down their end. And if you're not making that decision quickly to take the 3 and try and get back down there, I think it becomes that builds a lot of pressure on yourself to actually score the try. So
I do like there that you say come away with 5, if not 7, because, like, speaking of, Lolasio kicked every point, which is a great sign for a young fly half. You know, I think he was pretty keen to forget parts of his test debut because that was a thrashing against the All Blacks, and it was always hard to sort of do that. But one standout from that was that he scored the sole try in that 43-5 defeat. I would say that his first half, maybe he didn't get quite as involved, or he had that one poor error that sort of set up that second French try where Melvin Jaminet did an awesome torp down the field and he tried to catch it one-handed where it wasn't really an option. He could have just let it bounce out into touch, and the Wallabies lineout had been pretty solid. So I think they would have been happier having that. But I thought he really atoned for himself in the second half. He looked like he was spreading the ball quite well. And the kicking game, like, you really can't underestimate that, because we've had plenty of seasons over the years where it's been inconsistent goal kicking. And sometimes the goal kicking sort of, you know, not kept us in the matches as much as we'd like, or, you know, stopped us from perhaps getting a win. Whereas for a young 10 to come through and kick all those points, I thought that was a really great sign. So he ended up getting the conversion for that try and also a penalty really shortly after halftime. It seemed like the pressure was back on the throat. But then we just sort of exchanged penalties for a bit. And North, I might go to you for this. Between sort of, I guess right after that penalty, because I thought the Wallabies came out pretty strong, but between about the 45th minute and the 65th minute, it didn't really seem like there was much going on. Do you put that down to more of the size being young and inexperienced, maybe just not being able to string that many phases together or string that many, you know, I guess well-thought-out attacking plays together?
Yeah, I think that one comes down to maybe the structure and attacking plays a little bit more. I think both teams had chances where they held the ball for long enough periods where they, you know, could have developed something that turned into points. But I think maybe it's the fact that it's been a while between tests for the Wallabies at least. And then you've got the French team who is pretty young and lots of them probably haven't played together that much yet. So I think, yeah, when you combine those things, it probably is just a little bit of inexperience and underdoneness from both teams.
And speaking of the young players kicking goals, Louis Carbonell did quite well, but Melvin Jaminet, I mean, I hate to see him go over, but I do love a good penalty kick. I love a good drop goal, and his long-range penalty kick was a pearler. That was a nice one. It struck beautifully. So that was actually a really defining moment, because that took them up to 21-13. There was still 18 minutes left in the match, but we hadn't really looked like scoring in a while. So it was quite concerning. There was that bit of a feeling throughout the crowd that the Wallabies could come back and do it, but it just didn't look like we'd done anything to really get to that point until the 70th minute where, you know, another contender for the try of the match, Hooper did this awesome work. And I think this is really off the back of Tate McDermott. We'll probably shout him out a fair bit. He really quickened up the, I guess, the way in which the forwards hit the ball up off rucks, because he would also create an option where the players were constantly watching to see what he would do, because he'd pick it up, he'd run slightly in, and then he'd more of an offload than a pass. And we saw that really effectively with Valentini, Hooper, Wilson, and Nicerani just getting over the advantage line a bit with those sorts of plays. What ended up happening was they got pretty close to the line. I think Wilson was probably the main benefactor of that. He had a few nice runs getting quite close. And then the ball's pretty much on the line. Hooper did something really great where he picks the ball up and sort of backs himself onto being over the line and puts it down in a really clever play where he's sort of looking as if he might be acting as a halfback and maybe he can't be touched, but it's really just a game of millimeters. And he put it off perfectly. Like, it was a really smart play. It's something that I haven't seen, you know, this Wallaby side do. I thought that was a great show of leadership and really a great all-round performance by Hooper. We'll talk about some of the other stuff he did later on, but I thought that was a massive moment. Northie, when that happened, did you think we were going to win? Did that seem like a, oh yeah, we'll get the win now?
Not quite. Obviously, it's always great to see your team score a try, but at the same time, you know, without feeling lucky, it wasn't a long-range effort, but we had an inability to sort of consistently apply points for more than, you know, one burst at a time. So it almost felt like we'd got that try, and I wasn't actually overly confident that we could go back down there and get more points.
Yeah, I guess that was the thing, is we hadn't looked like we were getting the points that confidently. I think mainly because of how long it took us to set up that BPA try, where we were just struggling to, you know, get the rolling ball going, even though we had our full strength forward pack out there. I was surprised to see, I mean, the scrum and lineout was really good. The set piece I thought looked really good for the Wallabies in the majority, but we couldn't really get that firing, which is a concern with our, probably our best forward pack, maybe other than Tupou out there, which I guess we'll get to as well. One of the things that I guess stood out at the end, and you're probably sick of me yelling out, go for the drop goal as we were watching it, but they did actually attempt a drop goal in the 76th minute. And even though it wasn't successful, it is a big turning point from last year where we saw the teams not really know how to set that up or execute when they got close. And while the execution might still need a bit of tinkering, it is good to see Lolasio step up and have a crack at that. I think after that first one, I was getting quite panicked. And obviously we saw after that that, you know, the French had a penalty, they kicked it out. The game was over, it was 80 minutes, and they lost possession off the back of that line out. From there, surely the confidence levels were high. Once you saw that error, you thought we could pounce.
Yeah, exactly. That really did give us more momentum. I felt more confident, you know, clinching that ball off that line out than I did once we'd scored a try. You could feel the stadium lift. It looked like the players, you know, picked up an extra half step, and they were really, really, yeah, keen to just get the job done. It looks like they finally switched on the 81st minute. Once they realized that, hey, we could actually win this, they thought, well, let's go out there and do it.
It was quite interesting how they approached the setup, because you could see they started on nearly the 5 meter line in terms of the width. And they sort of worked their way all the way across the field until they were on the right-hand side of the post. Like, they probably crowded about 30 meters to the side, just working that through forward hit-ups. I think out of all the players that I feel sorry for, it's got to be Andrew Kellaway, because he was sitting by himself out on that wing for the last 3 minutes, maybe. Like, just... And calling for it too.
He was screaming for it as well. Even before that, in the lead up to the drop goal, he was pretty unmarked and screaming for it as well. I think that could have been a good play instead of the drop goal, getting it out to him. But even, yeah, at the same time, on that final play, he was unmarked out there.
His thighs are going to be sore this morning, because he was slapping them like crazy, trying to get them to notice and get the ball out. But I thought he was pretty solid. It's going to be good to talk about some of the debutants, because I think that's kind of where we had a bit of success. Some of the players coming off the bench and some of the players that, you know, were a little new, I thought they did quite well, the ones that got game time. I guess what it might be worthwhile touching on first, if we just go through the Aussie players 1 through 15, and we can just sort of have a bit of a chat about how they perform, because the first test of the year, it is always going to be a struggle. And obviously, with only the one win from six last year, I think a lot of people are quite happy that we just got the win. And it's showing that, you know, it's a sign that we can win ugly. You know, maybe the team from last year wouldn't have won. So it's good that, you know, they found a way to do it. But there's still, you know, a lot of holes. And the feedback's really 50-50. It's either that, you know, that optimism of, yeah, but we still did it. Or it's the, yeah, but did you see the way we did it? And trying to address, you know, it wasn't a great game to look at. And having been at the stadium, we both saw that. Just in terms of performance, I think we both agreed, and everyone we were with agreed, it was probably one of the worst test matches in terms of just all-round performance and the way the team gelled. And that's expected with a young side. So there are excuses for that, but it wasn't great to watch. So let's unpack that a bit. Starting at the front row, Slipper actually had quite a good game. I think there was the one penalty for hinging at one of the scrums, but otherwise he held out the scrum pretty well and, you know, made a few solid hits. What do you think of Slips up front? Would you be keen to see him again for the Tuesday test North, or because of his age, it's maybe worthwhile giving him a rest?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I think he put in a very solid performance. It's you know, what we expect of him these days, you know, to just get through all his work, do it really well, hold the scrum up. In saying that, Bell was really good when he got on. Mm. So it'd be interesting to see if they do want to give him a little bit of a more of a run, maybe playing for the first half or extend his time off the bench a little bit more next game. That'll be exciting to see.
Yeah, I was checking Bell's stats because he was one of the players I was really quite excited for. So he came on with about 19 minutes to play and made five carries, made three from three tackles. I was looking at the tackles, like, oh, three from three, that's not a heap, I guess. But looking at the last 19 minutes, like, how much ball did the French even have? Like, I think he must have done pretty much every tackle that they had the ball. So I was really impressed with him. I thought he did a great job coming off. So it's a nice sign of our props. I think that we've got options like that. And we may as well cover the other prop while we're talking about it. Ala Latoa and his replacement, Tupou. Both huge games, but, I mean, it's hard to go past Tupou. He set up that last try.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting what they're going to do there. I think, you know, there was a bit of a whisper, I guess, that Tupou, you know, you want to use him off the bench. You want to, you know, bring him on when other players are tired. But I think with his size and speed and handling, I don't think he needs tired players or tired forwards, tired backs to be able to be at his best and most damaging. I think, you know, we've seen him do it for the Reds for 80-minute games, and he's running just as hard and with just as much enthusiasm and trying to hit people just as hard in the 80th minute. He's got a huge motor on him. I think they really need to consider starting him.
And that's probably, I imagine that's what they'll do for the next test. And I'm keen to see if he can have that same destructive run, because you're right, he can do that. But it does still seem to be more the second half that he sort of comes to shine. So whether it's a question of his motor or not, I think you're right. Like, I think he could do it for the full 80, but I am keen to see how that approach plays out, because Alatoa was pretty good. I think he, you know, he still got involved quite a lot. You know, made five tackles, wasn't, you know, lighting them up or anything like that, but it's the running game. And that's where I think we need to see either we've got other runners on the field, where Sakai Lotto and Wilson can be taking the brunt of that, or, yeah, you're right, where we do use Tupou and using for that battering ram. The other two players in the front row, so Brendan Pangramosa, great game with a line out, I thought. I think he might have missed one. So right in the 40th minute when we had the penalty, kicked it out and went right to the back and went over Phillip. I think it was the only miss. But he also scored that try, which is quite nice, and made a fair few tackles. And then Nos Lonergan on debut, who I think threw his first line out not straight, you know, with the pressure of a test match, but then came really good and didn't miss another one from there. I think hit five lineouts on debut, which is great. Is it just a straight swap for you, North, for that Tuesday match, just swinging them around?
That one's probably up for debate a little bit more. I think BPA did really well. He's renowned for being a bit more of a scrummager and probably the best scrummaging hooker in Australia at the moment. So yeah, he could probably get another run. In saying that, he's moving overseas, so that's probably something that's going to be considered as they plan for the future as well. So I wouldn't be surprised either way if they decide to start BPA or if Noss gets the start.
I guess one of the things that I want to tie in with that is we've seen Fileti Kaitu get injured. So they've brought Conal McInerney into the squad just to sort of cover. Do you think there's much of a chance for the players that weren't in the original squad to get a game? So by that, I mean players like Conal McInerney and Ryan Lonergan and Erase the Money. Players that are there to cover the players in the squad that were injured. If they weren't in that original squad, do we really see them as much of a chance to start? And if so, like, is that a bit of a kick up the guts to the players that were named originally?
No, I don't think so at all. I think, injuries are a part of the game, unfortunately. If you're in the squad, you've got just as good a chance as being named as anyone else, I think. And especially on these tight turnarounds, everyone's got to be prepared to play. In terms of a kick in the guts to those players getting injured, I don't think they'd be too disgruntled about it. Yeah, I'm sure they're just working to get back on the field and serve the team as best they can.
And nicely done. I thought the front row performed well, and I thought the forwards as a whole were solid without being spectacular, which is more than you can ask for first hit out, I think, especially against a pretty big French pack. And where the French had a lot of size was a lock, so I thought Salakai Lotto and Matt Phillips stood out, but in particular, Darcy Swain. We were next to a Brumbies fan who was saying this is the best debut you'll ever see for a Wallabies player before he hopped on the field. And while that might have been a stretch, I thought he came out and did really well. His first play was charging the ball down from the back. He was really solid in all the set pieces. He seemed to have a really good push in the scrums as well, which is important for, the locks to be able to provide. I guess, North, just through the three players, did any of the three stand out to you? Or what combo would you like to see for the next match? Because really, between the three of these guys and Sidelaki Tamani, Swain was the only one I had question marks over, and he seemed to answer them all last night, so I'd be pretty happy with any of them.
Yeah, I think they all performed well. None of them really stood out. I think Swain probably had a few more key moments with the charge down and the line out sort of strengthening, I guess, when he came on. However, I think the work that Philip and both Salakai Lotto did is probably deserving of another start. I wouldn't be surprised to see if they actually keep the locks the same and then just maybe increase Swain's minutes again. I'd be a little bit surprised if they go straight to starting him. In saying that, I wouldn't mind it.
I think one of the things that surprised me most was Philip being a little bit more impressive with ball in hand than Salakai Lotto, because Salakai Lotto is that big body that we sort of expect to get over the advantage line. And he had a few runs and sucked in a few defenders, but didn't actually get many meters. I think the stats say 6 runs for about 1 or 2 meters. So it's not a lot. But Philip, 5 runs for 12 meters, chuck a few more runs in there. That's kind of what you want from your test lock, just like getting over the advantage line, sucking in 2 or 3 people that need to get him down, maybe someone that's trying to fetch the ball. And then if you've got a halfback that's getting really quick service, it's creating really good opportunities for either the next ruck next to them or for the backs outside. So I'd be pretty keen to see a bit more of that sort of running play. But again, I can't really fault any of the locks, especially because they made the line out tick quite well, I thought. We saw Lonergan's throw wasn't straight. And the one for the end of the first half, I think, was an overthrow. Just looking at that, Philip did get quite high and wasn't able to get to it. So I actually think the jumpers did quite a good job throughout the match as well. So keen to see more of the same. And I'm glad we've got a good rotation of options given, the likes of Skelton, Rory and Richie Arnold, and even, Adam Coleman and Isaac Rodder, they're not involved in the squad. So plenty of talent emerging, which is what we need. The back row is, I think, the area where the people had the most to talk about before the match. The people we were talking to, everyone was quite keen. A lot of people we spoke to were saying Valentini was going to be the man of the match. I think even on Twitter, I put out a post saying that we'd be recording the review this morning, and I posted it before the match started. And Nelson Dale from Draft Rugby got in touch and said, how good was Valentini in that first test? Have the Wallabies found their long-term first-choice blindside option? And he did say that 2 hours before kickoff, so he was just getting in early with the prediction. We've got to keep in mind, this was Valentini's first start, and I thought he did a pretty solid job, but I think he probably saw in himself the difference between test match rugby and super rugby. Because some of those pick and drives, some of those big hit-ups he had close to the line just didn't get quite the same amount of meters as he's used to. And I remember one of them in the second half, he had the pick and I was like, gee, you can see in his face, he thought he was going to go further than he did. Like that just, they really shunted him. And the French, to their credit, they have Gareth Edwards as a defense coach, the ex-Wales player. Awesome defense, I thought, from the French for a lot of it. And part of that might be because the Wallabies weren't firing an attack, but they did really well to hold us out for so well. Aside from Valentini, how good was it having Hooper back?
Yeah, he had an unreal game. I think, his work rate and work around the park was huge. He got turnovers, which, is probably the one facet of his game that you hear about a little bit is his, not at the breakdown enough. But he was doing heaps of the hard work. His running was on point. He was involved in the breakdowns. And his defense was, all there. It was great. It was great to have him back. It was a really, really strong first hit out, considering he's been overseas for a little while now.
You could hear the keyboard warriors backspacing. Oh, but he can't jackal but he can't pilfer. Because, yeah, you're right. He did that really early on. And I thought, gee, that's a massive turning point. That's going to gift us, 3 points right there. He is making big plays and he showed his leadership there. I think that's such a massive thing because McWright had an awesome Super Rugby season. But to have, 105 Test Wallabies step in, hasn't been in the environment for a while, but just look completely, at ease, completely natural as if he, has never been away. I thought that was pretty unreal. So I'm keen to see more of him. I still want to see McWright get a chance to start one of the tests because he's a really exciting young talent. But how they balance that with Hooper will be interesting, especially because as we sort of discussed, it does create an issue for who would be the captain if Hooper's not there. And especially when O'Connor's injured, if he's not back for the next match, that could create a few question marks over how they fill that in. So we might discuss that in a little bit. Harry Wilson, I thought, did a great job, got really involved with all the hit-ups, a few good meters. I thought he looked 10 times better with Tate on. I think their combination at the Reds has really solidified each other's game. They know exactly where they're each going to be. And when Gordon was starting, I think we saw a pretty even mix of Valentini and Wilson as sort of the first up runner and then a few of the locks outside. With Tate, Wilson was always the first man there. He was always getting that ball until they got subbed off at about the 75th or 76th minute. He was just taking every ball he could and getting good meters from it as well. So I thought that was a pretty unreal performance. But I guess we get to the backs, and this is where we weren't as solid. And I've got specifically my notes in front of me from the preview that I did before the match. Gordon was preferred for his key skills, quality of kick and game and distribution. Plus he did good game management against the Kiwis. So that was sort of a quote from some of the Wallabies coaching staff. Northie, I might let you cover this because you were quite vocal about some of those points throughout the match. Would we agree with those points?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't. Not in this game. I think based on past performances, the statements are true. He generally has a very solid passing game, good game management, and a good kicking game as well. I think it just showed that he's coming back from injury, probably hasn't played enough footy recently. I think that's all it comes down to. It'll be interesting to see next week how they line up because as we've sort of touched on without actually saying yet, Tate was very good once he came on. He really picked up the rate of play. The forwards were running off him really well. And as we've already mentioned, he was just scooting a little bit more, being a bit more of a threat around the ruck created, more space on the edges for his forwards that were hitting those angles. It was really good to see. His passing was really good and his box kicking was good when he came on as well. So I think going off those performances, he should be starting next week. That's one of the key changes that I'd be putting in.
It was interesting because I think a good chunk of the communication issues, and it's been brought up a little bit, when we look at that back line, we had a Waratahs 9, we had a Brumbies 10, we had a Rebels 12, and a Reds 13. So our sort of key playmaking area, just none of them had really played much footy together. So it was always going to be a little bit tricky to see how they integrate and how they sort of, you know, piece their skills together. I think the box kicking was a bit of an issue. It just did seem a little bit aimless. There wasn't much much fight for the ball until that second half. And it's one of the things that I think we saw ages ago with the Irish side. Conor Murray became a master at it, and you know, teams sort of followed suit and tried to copy it. But they were all really well positioned. They were always right next to the sideline. So the worst case scenario, if the opposition team gets the ball, you can sort of tackle them out. They were always a perfect distance so that, you know, you could contest it. We haven't quite mastered that. A lot of our box kicks look like they're going sort of, you know, 5, maybe 10 meters. And the ones that went further were just a bit too aimless. So just refining that's going to be a pretty big skill because I think because of the execution, box kicks have become pretty maligned in Australia, but there's a good use for them. We just need to be able to execute them. And the execution is probably one of the big facets. And we can talk about that with Lolasio. He had a really solid second half, I thought, and directed the ball a lot better around. The first half was tough. I don't think everything went quite his own way. And I think there was a bit of a mix between him and Tamura's, who was going to be playmaking. And a lot of the set players just looked a little clumsy. But that's that first game, Russell, to coming through from a young player. I thought he was really impressive. And I think even though I had O'Connor as my starting 10, I do want to see more of Lolasio. I do think he's, you know, got quite a future ahead of him for the Wallabies if he can sort of keep this sort of going. How do we approach the fly half for the second test? Do we keep Lolasio in that seat and save O'Connor for the last one? Or is it time to get O'Connor in there and maybe have Lolasio come off the bench and he can sort of keep adding to his minutes?
Yeah, that second option is probably what I'd be doing. I'd probably start O'Connor for the next game, provided he's fit enough. I think Noah did have a good game. I think he really fed off Tate. I think, you know, when Tate came on and sped the game up, it allowed Noah to play a bit more of his natural game and you know, he looked a bit more confident out there, which was, you know, really good to see. I think, yeah, next game, if Jock's fit, I think he gets the start. A short turnaround for still such a young player in such a key position. Even after a good game, I don't think, you know, he'd be disheartened starting off or coming off the bench for the next game. And with how he played, I don't think it's a case of bringing him on with 2 minutes to go just to get him on the field. You know, let him get on, let him control the game for a little bit, give him 25, 30 minutes. So he can come on and can actually control the team for while he's on there instead of just a couple of minutes at the end. So, yeah, provided Jock's fit, I'd probably like to see him start. And then, yeah, obviously that'll make for an interesting third game decision at 10 there if they do decide to start Jock for one of them and then Noah the other one.
And yes, the decision that goes with that as well is the centre combination because I think the centres have had a bit of a tweak where I think there's a good chance we would have seen Parisi if he was healthy. And I think also if O'Connor was healthy at 10, we might not have seen Tamura at 12. So I think those sorts of decisions could be changed and tweaked a little bit for the next test. I think the centers is where I was the most concerned because Tamura's our most experienced back out there and he didn't really show it. 5 runs for 6 meters, 4 from 6 tackles. There was one gap here that he saw, but he couldn't actually execute. He didn't have the turn of pace. And I just didn't see him really create anything as that second playmaker. So that is a bit of a concern. And then Paisami, he was pretty good with ball in hand when he had a bit of space. And he's a damaging player. He does attract defenders. I think he ended up with 63 meters of his 9 carries, which is, you know, a nice little return, 4 defenders beaten. But he turned the ball over 3 times. And we just saw too many times, just small errors, I guess, around the delivery to him. And part of that is his fault and where he's reading the game from. So my hope is that we see a Paisami and Ikitau center combination for next week with Paisami shifting into 12. But the thing that makes me think that might not happen is Ikitau was on the bench and was the only unused sub. So that is a bit of a concern. Northy, do you think that is too green? I mean, we only just scraped through a 2-point win. Is that too risky to go up by some Ikitau center combination, or is this the right time to do it?
Look, I wouldn't say it's a risk. I think Ikitau definitely started the Super Rugby AU season in very hot form. If we can get any of that back, I think he'd be, you know, really damaging as a test player, and I think he'd complement Paisami really well. He's, you know, got a good pass on him and can defend well. So yeah, he'd definitely be able to help Paisami and take a bit of that playmaking away from him. In saying that, you know, sometimes I think, you know, we as fans and the coaches as well can get a bit obsessed with draining the bench just for the sake of it. You know, it makes sense, you know, especially for the forwards, you know, and front rowers, you know, that's always going to happen. But particularly, you know, especially with maybe a loose forward, a lock, you know, a centre, an outside back, they don't always need to get on the park. You know, just because they, you know, just because he didn't get on doesn't mean he's not ready for a test. It just means that, you know, Rennie was happy with how things were unfolding. You know, maybe didn't want to put him on with, you know, 20 minutes to go or 10 minutes to go only for him to, you know, not perform how he would have liked. I'm sure as a test debut, if you're starting, you know, you've got a full game to make your impact. You'd be pretty stoked with that. So yeah, I'd be pretty impressed, or I'd be pretty keen to see that center combo of Paisami Ikitau.
Lovely. Because I think that's one of the things we didn't quite get was just that backline combination. I don't think there's much risk in trialing that out because they are both great players. And we saw them both create a lot from nothing in that Super Rugby season. I think I'll quickly cover Tom Wright and Tom Banks. Because Tom Wright, he had some glimpses. He had a little run down the side and couldn't quite keep that in. Tom Banks, I think his in-play game was pretty good. He ran the ball back relatively well. His kicking was good. But just one of the things that we kept saying, and Jimmy, the guy I was sitting next to at the rugby, brought up a lot, and he's... Someone watches a bit of the rugby, but probably isn't quite as involved as us. And even he was saying they're not doing the basics well and they're killing themselves by not executing those simple things. Like one of the things that stood out, you know, pretty drastically, second or third minute, we get a penalty and Banks doesn't kick it out. Like that's one of those things that you just have to get out. You have to get, you know, some sort of reward for the penalty. And, you know, that was an immediate pressure release for the French. And then the other one, we're in a bit of a kicking duel with them. I think Tom Wright got it back. He did well to keep it in. Falling inside to Tom Banks, and he had a lot of time to try and clear it. I think probably ran it about 5 or 6 meters, you know, after catching the ball, and then just hoofed it straight out from outside his 22. But it was an up and under. Like, it was supposed to be a contestable kick. It wasn't anywhere near where it should have been. And the other thing, even if it had been inside the field of play, it was back towards where all the French players were. So I just think that is coming back to haunt us a little bit. We spoke during the season that the Australian team's in-play kicking and tactical kicking isn't what it's, you know, ideally meant to be. And it isn't quite, it doesn't seem quite as planned as it does seem sort of reactionary. I think that's one of the things we'll need to touch on. And I think that's one of the calls for Reece Hodge to start at fullback. There's been a few people sort of already discussing that as an option. North, would you be keen to see Hodge step back there? Or was there enough from Banks that you came to, you know, let him have another crack and see how he goes in the next two tests?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I think I was really keen for Banks to have a blinder. I wanted him to lock down that 15 jersey. You know, it's been... you know, had a bit of player rotation through there for the last few years. We haven't really had anyone there consistently. And at his best, he can be very good. And even in the Super Rugby Trans-Tasman, we've seen that he can, you know, do like play very well against, you know, the best quality opposition going around. So I think he is the player that's going to be there moving forward. It wasn't his most inspiring game. One thing that did give me a lot of confidence is that I think it was maybe about the 60th minute, sort of when that rate of play picked up a little bit, on when he ran the ball back once, you could just tell that as soon as he took that kick, he knew he was running it. And he went at the defense really hard, which I think is something that I've been a little bit that I've said that he doesn't actually, you know, hit the defense hard enough. I think sometimes it looks like he goes into contact. He doesn't really want to, or he's, you know, looking for an offload or something, looking to get to ground too quickly. But on this occasion, he didn't shape to kick. He just ran at the defense really hard, you know, not quite a half break, but did well to sort of draw in two defenders. You know, I think he just needs more of that. I think maybe at test level, he's overthinking a little bit. He's getting stuck in two minds about what sort of kick he should do. Should he kick? Should he run? I think we persist with him a little bit longer. I just want to see him run the ball heaps more. We know he's got wheels on him. I want to see him use him.
Love it. And I agree. Like, he is one of the best players when there's a gap, because he's quick. Like, he's someone that can just clap it on quite quickly. And I think that's what, you know, if he's given a little bit more space from that fullback position, he can really, you know, I think tear oppositions apart. And we saw it a lot in Super Rugby. We saw it increasingly a bit more against the New Zealand teams. And I thought that was a good sign leading into the test matches, because obviously doing that against New Zealand Super Rugby sides is different to the Australian Super Rugby sides. And doing that again in test match rugby is different again. So if he can translate that across, I'm going to be really stoked with how he's progressing. The player I left out was probably the man of the match for a lot of that game, because he was just a workhorse. And I think it's the kind of play we expect from him. Marika Corombetti. Now, I'd say that Tate had a bigger impact off the bench, and I'd say Hooper did, you know, better things as captain. But when you look at someone from minute one through to minute 80, just doing everything you want, I think he ended up with 17 runs. And over 60 meters, four defenders beaten. You know, his tackling wasn't amazing, but you haven't seen someone go for the ball or just, you know, be in the right space as often as Corombetti is. And every time he touched the ball, the crowd cheered. Like, he was probably behind Tupou. He was probably the biggest superstar of the match, I'd say. Like, everyone cheered when he got the ball. So I know he's heading overseas, but I think we need to start Dalgunu for the next match. Give him a rest. He can play again in the third test, but we do need to start looking at those other options. But I guess for you, North, this ties into the overall question. What do you think of Corombetti, and who was your man of the match?
Yeah, look, he'd definitely be up there. I think one of the key, watching the game live, he was the only player, especially in the first half, who looked dangerous on the Aussie team whenever he touched the ball. You know, we get stuck in these phases and not really go anywhere and not look like a threat. But as soon as he touched the ball, it looked like something could happen. And he was making space for those around him as well. And the way he, you know, draws in defenders, the way, you know, he bounces out of tackles, you know, it's going to create space for those people around him as well. The work rate, 17 runs from a winger is immense, especially when so many of them are in tight. He's not just running the ball back off kicks and getting easy meters. He'll be, you know, taking hit ups off the ruck and picking drives himself. Mm. He's an incredible player. And I think he's going to be really missed by the Wallabies. We have been able to rely on him as a bit of a pressure release at some stages, yeah, where it's just get the ball to him and we'll get some meters and he'll draw some people in. So I think, yeah, we'll definitely miss him once he's overseas. And I'm keen to keep him playing while he's here. I think he's been a good servant to Australian rugby and deserves to keep playing right up till he heads away.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think it touches into Naisirani as well, who we didn't discuss, I guess, because he only had 4 minutes off the bench. One of the things I like most about the Rebels, there isn't that much they did in their attack this year that I loved, but the 1-2 punch of those two doing pick and drives is really hard to defend, because you've got two massive bodies and two guys that are really quick to the ruck as well. They get there early. Often it'll be Corombetti who's got that first run. He just goes straight through. But Naisirani immediately picks it up and they both can carry it one hand. So they're palming people off. There's not really people getting ready to defend them. I think it's something that could really be executed at this level as well if they're on the field together at the same time. I see no reason, especially because Rennie doesn't seem to be stopping Corombetti from hitting those rucks. I'll finish with two things, because I know we're sort of rabbiting on about the players a bit. It got brought up quite a bit on that post I put up from Seb Smeaton and Hugh Tindall. So two great contributors to the rugby discussion online. I think just talking mainly about execution and how we were quite close to things going quite differently. And it's a good perspective for people that might be disheartened or quite upset with that performance. So just talking about whether execution was an issue or if it was a first game rust, because the game could have been an easy win if Gordon's pass was slightly flatter for that Paisami try. If Paisami's kick to Kellaway had stayed in field, if Wright grounds the ball off Lolasio's grubber, if Banks finds touch off that first penalty kick, if Wilson doesn't knock the ball on it at the back of that scrum. So we've got those five moments. Three of them are direct try-scoring opportunities. The Banks kick could have been another try-scoring opportunity. The scrum, I guess, would have stopped a try from the French. It is fine margins in the game, isn't it? So I think the promising sign with this is we adjust those things. We could have won quite comfortably. The challenge is we didn't really look comfortable in a lot of that, and we are still finding our groove. So I guess the question that leads to that is, with this next test, who's going to bounce back better, the French or the Wallabies?
I think you'd have to think it'll be the Aussies. I think just playing on home turf and not having to travel is going to be a huge advantage for them. And hopefully with a few changes and you know, maybe a little change in tactics and how the game's run, I think, yeah, you know, some of those moments, the ball bounces different, so to speak. We get the rub of the green. And, you know, we could win by a comfortable margin. That's not taking anything away from the French, though. It was a great game from them. They defended really well. You know, the fact that they got the tries on the board with how limited a possession they have just goes to show how dangerous they are. If, you know, the Wallabies don't improve, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, we're having the same conversation next week, except it's after a loss. The Wallabies will need to up their game to make sure that they, you know, win next week. I don't think they'll get as lucky.
And to finish that off, who are two players that didn't play this week that you'd like to see next Tuesday?
Ooh, I think you touched on one of them. Dungunu is just electric. It'd be nice to see him in. And then depending how it pans out, this might be a little bit of red bias coming through here, but maybe Fraser McWright as well. I think his style of play is built for test match rugby. It'd be great to see him to get on and get some minutes.
Yeah, no, absolutely agree. I had a, because I was going to ask you first, I had to make sure I had four names in my head because I thought you could take two of them and that they were two. But I think on top of that, I'm really keen to see Lenny Cattell. I think it is time to sort of adjust our centre combo moving forward. And I think he's one of the players that excited me the most from Super Rugby, even though he wasn't consistently outstanding the whole time. And then the other player is Reece Hodge. I think he provides a very solid role for us. And I don't mind if he starts at fullback or he's the 23 because he's so versatile. But I do think there's something that we can, I guess, benefit from having him. And I did notice we had a penalty where I think it must have been about 50-something metres out. And I kept thinking, Lolasio doesn't have the range for that. That penalty would put us in front. But we don't have anyone that can go for it. And you heard people in the crowd, the kids behind us were yelling out as well, oh, kick it, kick it. But no one could. It is those sort of moments where just having the possibility of Hodge being able to do that could come in handy. So maybe him slobbing into the 23 jersey might be the best mix. Because you're right, I do think Banks could benefit from more time in the saddle. Anyway, we started the season with a win. How good's that?
Hopefully we can do it again next week. I'm really excited to see what changes are made. And, you know, on this short turnaround, it'll be good to see this, you know, the full squad being used, hopefully.
Yeah. I one last thing to finish, because I've had this discussion come up a little bit. As a Queenslander, and as someone that's probably going to go to the third test, would you rather it be a dead rubber, like you're going in 2-0, or would you not like the French to win, but be excited by the prospect of having to, you know, fight for the series on the line?
Ooh, tough question. I think, you know, as exciting as a decider is, I think you always want your team to win at any cost.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, I'd be happier going in with the chance of a clean sweep against the French with that third game at Suncorp, having locked up the series already, as opposed to, you know, the thrill of a decider, as good as it would be. I'd like three wins after, you know, what could be written down as a, you know, pretty disappointing test season last year.
Absolutely. All right, great. Because that was my thought too. I want to make sure, because I think that might be a bit more of a state of origin sort of, you know, mindset of just like, oh, yeah, it's going to be decided the last one. I'd be quite happy to have a 2-0 going into that last one. But we got to earn that. And I'm keen to see how we do that. There'll be plenty of discussion with that on Sunday night with the Pick and Drive crew. They'll be chatting to Ben Alexander again. So make sure you tune into that. But otherwise, Northie, thanks for coming on and chatting about the first Wallabies match. I'm keen to see the second one again with you, and we'll probably discuss it again. Keen to see how they bounce back after a first up win.
Awesome, mate. Cheers.